WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Quentin Tarantino has found something in surf music that I certainly never heard until I saw Tarantino's new film, Pulp Fiction. He says surf music sounds to him like rock and roll spaghetti western music, rock and roll Ennio Morricone. Tarantino uses a couple of surf records as part of his film score. Bullwinkle Part 2 by the Centurions plays during the John Travolta heroin montage. And Dick Dale's Miserloo is the opening credit music. Tarantino says he never understood the connection between surfing and surf music. Coming up, we'll get an explanation from the king of surf guitar himself, Dick Dale. First, let's hear Dale's recording of Miserloo and Tarantino's explanation of why he chose it for the credit sequence. These comments are from a Pulp Fiction promotional CD.
To me, the opening credits are very, very important because that's sort of like your, that's like the only like mood time that most movies give themselves, you know, and like, you know, a cool credit sequence and the, like with that and the music that plays in front of it, you know, or no play any music in front of it, you know, whatever you decide to do, that sets up like a tone for the movie that, that is important for you. And so that's, you know, so I'm always trying to find like what the right opening credit or closing credit sequence should be, you know, early on when I'm just even thinking about the story, because once I find it, that really kind of triggers me in to what the personality of this piece should be, what the rhythm of this piece should be. Like I'm saying, you don't have to use music. It could just be silence, all right? All right, and but then that's important. That is like kind of in some ways like the rhythm and more or less the personality you're trying to project in this film. Having Miserloo as your opening credits, it's just so intense, you know. It just says, you're watching an epic, you're watching this big old movie, just sit back as, you know, I mean, because it's so loud and blaring at you, you know. It's just like, actually, it throws down a gauntlet that the movie now has to live up to, because it's just saying, we're big.
That's Dick Dale on guitar. Dick Dale was one of the originators of the surf music sound, and his band, the Deltones, was the focus of the music scene that grew up around the California surf culture of the late 50s and early 60s. Dale played in the films Beach Party and Muscle Beach Party and the campy sequel Back to the Beach. He doesn't surf anymore. In fact, he doesn't even live near the beach. He lives in the desert. I spoke to him about surf guitar in July 1993.
Music to me is like a facet in my life. I love many things. I've trained lions and tigers for, raised them for 30 years and been in the martial arts for 30 years, been flying airplanes and just doing so many things that are very interesting, and music was just one of them. And I was raised actually listening to the big band era, you know, like Guy Lombardo, Harry James, and the first person that I really listened to was Gene Krupa on drums. And that's where I get this heavy staccato drumming effect on playing. Like Mick Fleetwood of Fleetwood Mac once said to me, watching me, he said, my God, he says, you're the most percussive guitarist I've ever seen in my life. You look like you're playing drums. And I do. I'm playing all the different parts of the drums when I play my guitar. So actually, drums was my first, and Gene Krupa was my first big influence.
Some of the surf music stars didn't really surf, most notably the Beach Boys. But you did. You actually did surf. Is there a connection between the sounds that you'd hear surfing and the kind of music you were playing?
Yes. The sounds were actually compared to actually my lions and tigers and the ocean, the power of my tigers and the power of the ocean. When I would get, you know, thrown across a cage, you know, with one blow, or seeing the cat go with 2,200 pounds per square inch bite through a stainless steel pan, and you just marvel at man cannot control that. And then you get out in a wave, and then you get out and you stop paddling, and you're facing a 6-footer or an 8-footer, and let alone a 10-footer. It is the most frightening thing in the world, and you just have to just dig down and go for it. And then when you get sucked up and taken over, you never feel strength like that in your life, and you just can't stop that power. So you must ride with it. And that's when I learned to really go with the flow of everything in life. And the waves did create my feelings of that sound, that ticka-ticka-ticka-ticka-ticka. It was like the lip of a wave coming over the top of my head. I'd stick my finger in the wall and get my ear up as close as I could, getting in a tube, or then doing a bottom turn and missing it and getting sucked up over the top and being just crunched right through your board. And in those days, we used the big 10-footers, you know.
Did the sound of the ocean make you want to get that loud, amplified sound that you wanted?
Yeah, it's a combination of the ocean and the roar of my tigers and lions, and just putting it all together, that force. And the ocean just has the two sounds. It has the one that comes over the top of your head. It's a lacy sound. And then it has that bottom rumbling sound. And then it has that wipeout sound. And with my big 60-gauge strings, like most guitar players are using 7s and 8s and 9s, the slinkies, you know, and 10s, my thinnest string is a 14 unwound. And then I use two 18 unwounds for my second and third string. And then my fourth string, I use a 38 wound. And my fifth, I use a 48. And then I use a 58 or a 60, whichever ones I can get.
So this is like really thick strings you're using. And that gives it a deeper sound?
Yeah, it gives it a big, Joel Sullivan calls them bridge cables. It gives you a real, real fat, thick sound, along with the combination of what goes into this amplifier and the guitar and the speaker. It's a combination of everything. But playing them is very hard. It's very painful because it's like taking your finger and going up and down, you know, the sidewalk with it. And that's why when I make faces, everybody goes, "Oh man, you make the neatest faces." I go, "That's pain. That's not."
No. What about the picking style that you developed?
The picking came from my father's side of the family. His mother and father were born in Beirut, Lebanon, and my mother's side of the family were born in Poland. So I was subject to the musical styles of both countries. But when I had that influence of that Arabic music, when I came to California, a kid asked me, he said, "Can you play on one string?" Because I was playing what I called rockabilly. And I developed a rockatuck style of strumming on the guitar because I didn't have a whole band. So I would go tinkata 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 tinkata. So now when I did that, this little boy, he was probably about 10, and at my first show at the Rendezvous Ballroom in Balboa, that's when it opened up. We had like 17 surfers and the kids I was surfing with. And he says, "Can you play on one string?" And I didn't know what to do. And I says, "Well, come back tomorrow night, and I'll have something for you," just to get rid of them. And then when I went home, I says, "Oh, my God, I'm going to get caught. I'm going to be found out that I'm a fake, you know, that I can't play on one string or something." And I thought, and I says, "Mizzaloo." And Mizzaloo was played very slowly. I went and quadrupled the sound. I went tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick because I wanted a machine gun staccato picking style, which is very difficult to play because you have to keep your meter properly. And then as a result, you break stainless steel strings and you melt picks down, two or three of them in a song, they melt. And that's why I have a special pick holder that I reach down and I throw one out when I play and I pick one up and I continue melting. But that's how I get that sound. It's like a machine gun style, picking style.
Well, let's hear your original recording of Mizzaloo, which you made back in 1962.
Yeah, I think the original people that did it are probably turning over in their grave when they heard it the way I play it.
We'll be right back.
Dick Dale as reissued on Rhino Records, and Dick Dale also has a new album out. What was the scene like on the beach when you started surfing and playing?
We would go down to the beach at 5 o'clock in the morning to get the early glass off and build a fire to keep warm. We never had wetsuits at that time, so we froze in the water. Our legs would turn blue. We'd beat on our legs to stop the pain, and we just hoped that the next wave, waiting for the next wave, and you just beat on our thighs, just to keep the pain from going away. It was just that everybody had a camaraderie about them. And basically in California, everyone that went to a Dick Dale dance, we all met at the beach and we would all surf, and we'd just surf all day, come out of the water, break and have a sandwich and go back in and surf to the evening glass offs.
My guest is Dick Dale, the king of the surf guitar. We're after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're featuring a 1993 interview with Dick Dale. His recording Miserloo is used in the new film Pulp Fiction. When you started playing, you wanted a really loud sound, and you couldn't get it loud enough. And you knew Leo Fender, the guitar maker, and what you worked together to get an amplifier that would give you the volume you wanted?
Well, what happened was it wasn't as much as volume. What it was a quality of sound. I wanted to get a fat, thick, deep sound that was very fat, sounding like a big floor tom, a tom-tom. Because once again, listening to the Gene Krupa drumming, and when we never mic'd our amplifiers, we never had mics in front of amplifiers, so the amplifier had to sound thick and pure on its own merit. And with Leo making just amplifiers that are only 10-inch speakers, you cannot get a sound out of a 10-inch speaker that gives you a fat, thick sound. So when Leo Fender would call me to come to his factory, he said, "Dick, I've got it. I've got this the sound." I'd go up there and I'd play this amplifier that he'd have, and it would be really loud, and really powerful. And I go, "Wow, that's sounds great." But then when I took it to the Rendezvous Ballroom and got it on the stage, and there's 4,000 people out there, all of a sudden their clothes would suck up the sound and suck up the thickness and the bassness of this sound, and I wouldn't have any more power or any more depth of sound. So I kept trying to tell Leo that, and we kept on making all these adjustments with output transformers, with speakers, and that's how I blew up over 48 speakers and amplifiers. They'd catch on fire. The speakers would freeze. The speakers would tear from the coils. We went to Lansing Company and said, "Listen, we need a beefier speaker that'll handle the big bass strings, that'll handle this output transformer." And then Leo finally came to, and Freddie Travers came to the Rendezvous, stood in the middle of 4,000 people to watch what I was doing, and they looked at each other and they said, "Now I know what Dick's trying to tell me." So he went back to the drawing board, came up and invented the Dick Dale Showman amplifier and the dual Showman amplifier with the 15-inch Lansing speaker. That was the end result of the sound, and along with the creations that we did on the Stratocaster guitar, making it a real thick body, because the thicker the wood, the more pure the sound.
Right. Let me play one of your early records. This dates back to 1962. It's Surf Beat. You want to say something about the record? And, right before we started the interview, you told me you hate your early records. Do you hate this record?
Well, I don't hate the song. No, I don't hate the song. I hate the way it was recorded, because it just wasn't big and fat like I play. And no one's ever been able to capture that. In high tone, this is the first time in my life that I ever consented to come in, like 30 years of recording. I come back from 30 years or something, and they said, "Dick, do what you want." And this is the first time in my life I ever had an engineer wanting to please and say, "Hey, don't worry about the time being spent," like High Tone said. "Don't worry about it. We're going to put everything into how long it takes to get you happy, to get that sound." And the end result was no fancy overdubbing. Ry Cooter was asked by Scotty. He said, "How do I record Dick Dale?" And Ry Cooter said, "Don't infect Dick Dale's brain with anything going on today, because he don't know what's going on today. He's up in the mountain someplace, and he could care less. Just plug him in, turn the tape recorder on, and let him go, and don't let the needles go into the red, and just record it." And that's exactly what we did. And it was nothing but just creativity right from beginning to end.
So you don't like the way you were recorded on the early records?
No, it did not have, it sounded too tinny, and I was I was ashamed to play them to anybody.
You were ashamed to play your own records?
I never played my own records. I never even kept them in the house.
Hmm.
Because I listened to Hank Williams instead.
Well, okay, so I'm going to play it.
Does that sound strange?
Well, yeah. But I'll be the one playing. I'll play your 1962 recording of Surf Beat. That's Dick Dale recorded in 1962. It's interesting. I mean, here you are like Mr. Surf Guitar and everything. You're living in the desert. Pretty paradoxical. What's it like for you to live so far from the ocean?
Well, you know, out of sight, out of mind. And the thing lies is I almost got squished away from the ocean because the population is just, it's just like somebody built a shoebox and put a bunch of mice in it, and the mice kept growing and growing, and the shoebox stays the same. So it's so sad that the population is just exploding, and everyone's running around with their heads chopped off or something. So I wanted peace. So I went up to the high desert, and if I don't speak, I can hear my ears ring. And it's so wonderful up there. It's like living in a tomb. And it just gives you another 20 years to your life because it's so beautiful with the desert creatures. And it's a place to raise my 17-month-old son. And it's just peaceful, so peaceful.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. I can't wait to get back and out there and do the whole thing.
Dick Dale recorded last year. His latest record is called Unknown Territory. This is Fresh Air.